How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Joe works the right side. Puts it down on the deck. They double team. He jump stops in the lane. He pulls a pass to the corner. It's Ingles from Happy Valley. And he hits. 102-94.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Locked On Jazz. Game 5. Edition from Los Angeles, a special edition. Craig Bowlerjack, Matt Harpring, and Ron Boone, and I roundtable to get you ready for game number 5. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Bum 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 pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Welcome to Locked On Jazz, game 5, Jazz and the Clippers. This is a mammoth one. Generally, whoever wins Game 5 wins the series. 80% of teams win, home teams win Game 7, 82%. So the Jazz would like to find a way to get this one in L.A., really take control of the series and show that they are the better team. So this is really going to be a great show today. We sat down, we arrived down the balcony of my hotel room. On the 11th floor, and luckily Matt and Craig and Ron didn't throw me overboard. And we just talked for 30 minutes about the matchups. Matt had some incredible thoughts on what to see. Ron had some great perspective. Craig's got his perspective. It was terrific to have all four of us together. Remember that these games are all on local television. So they are still on Root Sports. There's a national broadcast, but why would you watch that? Watch Matt and Craig and make sure you get the local. Soon enough, if we advance, you'll only have your choice of national television. By the way, if we advance, it's going to be a quick turnaround. I think if we win this series in 6, or if the Clippers do, Sunday, with the Warriors win last night, we'll play Sunday in probably a day game in San Francisco or in Oakland. So almost no time to prep. And then if you win on Sunday, the Jazz, I think, in Clippers, all likelihood, will be a day game on Sunday, would be my guess, just the way the schedule's playing out. I've been wrong on this before, but that game would in turn be the win. I think the next game would be Tuesday. So this is definitely going to be a quick change. And frankly, one of our greatest advantages is our head coach and his ability to prepare a game plan, and we will be cut definitely short on that. All right, let's go to our pin across the world. It comes from Michael Madsen. Put a big fat pin in Rexburg, Idaho. The Jazz moved to Utah when I was 8 years old. I've been a huge Jazz fan ever since. I grew up in a small town in Utah, shooting hoops in the backyard and listening to Hot Rod on a little transistor radio. I have vivid memories of Ricky Green, Daryl Griffith, Adrian Dantley, Frank Layden. I still see Olajuwon sucker punching the Whopper, Billy Pultz. Every once in a while, we would splurge and drive to the big city and get the cheapest seats in the Salt Palace. Life has taken me to New York and Japan, but I've always maintained my diehard loyalty to the Jazz. We now live in Rexburg, Idaho. My 6 kids are growing up Jazz fans. There's a lot of Jazz fans in Idaho. Last year, I took my 16-year-old son to a regular season game for the first time in my life, sat in the lower bowl. We had a great time. It's good to be back in the playoffs. Go Jazz. P.S. You do a great job calling the games. Hot Rod would be proud. I subscribe to your podcast and love listening to your analysis. Keep up the excellent work. From Mike Madsen. If Hot Rod is proud, my life would be complete. So, anyway, today's show, by the way, before we sit down with, and I'll give a thought or two on my end before we sit down with Craig and Matt and Ron, is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. Had a nice lunch with KO and Blake and the Murdochs yesterday. Just chit-chatting about the business, the driverless cars, what's going on with their companies, and basketball, obviously, for the playoffs. The Murdochs are good people. And let me tell you what, if you're a Toyota Camry or a Honda Accord driver, and you're just regular into that hole, take a second and look at the Sonata. take a second and look at the Hyundai Sonata and see what you suddenly can get for the price. And see that what, find out what a Sonata, which is $18,810, if you look on their site right now and you look at the Sonata SE sedan, $18,810, and compare that to what your the sedan you're driving right now, and I'll bet you'd be surprised at how many more things you get. I've been driving the Santa Fe, blown away by it. Frankly, you go look at some of the details of what you can get for the Santa Fe for under $30,000, and you go spend an extra $20,000, put a Lexus name on it, and you don't get as many features. The cameras, for example, on the Hyundai Santa Fe, they have a top camera, so you get each side, each front and back, whenever you're parking, wherever you're going. That is not something that's a feature on other high-end for $20,000 more SUVs. The Hyundai brand is maybe something you're not comfortable with or know. Take some time and research it. I've been blown away by driving a Hyundai of what you get for the money and what you get, what the car delivers, how smooth it is, how nice it feels, how luxury it feels, and then all the bells and whistles and what the price you're doing it for. It's really, I think I've told you the story that I understand this is, you know, I've never thought I'd ever give my kid who's 14 a new car when he turns 16, but suddenly driving this with all the safety features, it's reasonable. It's not like if I gave my kid a Lexus, you should punch me in the face. You know, it's not ostentatious. No, there's nothing wrong with a Lexus. You just don't understand my point of that is, you know, if giving your 16-year-old kid a brand new $60,000 car or something like that, you should punch me in the face. That's all I'm saying. Nothing against Lexus. You know what I'm saying. Never mind. Anyway, I've really been blown away. The Murdochs are good people. 4646 South State Street. You can check it out. That's where the Murdoch of Hyundai is. The Murdoch Hyundai of Murray is. There's also one in Linden and in Logan. Really, I have been super impressed. All right, well, as we get ready to sit down with the boys, I will remind you quickly that you can get your SeatGeek tickets to any upcoming game using the promo code LOJAZZ. Download the SeatGeek app, and if you use the promo code LOJAZZ, you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. That's LOJAZZ. All right, here it is, the round table with the guys. Oh, wait, I was going to give you a thought or two before I go to it. A quick thought or two. Actually, we get to everything in this. I think we get into everything. I got nothing to add. Let's just get right to the round table. Here it is with Craig, with Matt, with Ron, Jazz Broadcaster Roundtable on Locked On Jazz. So here we all sit in Los Angeles. Nice view of the San Gabriel Mountains. And if I lean out far enough, I can get Los Angeles. Craig Bolajack, Matt Harpring, Ron Boone. I could fall and die. If you guys really don't like me, yes, Mr. Boone?
Those are hills. Those are not mountains. That does not look like Utah's mountains right there. You call that a mountain?
I think they call those the San Gabriel Mountains. And I actually would tell you that I actually think they're bigger than they look. They're not Utah mountains, but they look bigger than they actually...
Foothills usually are.
And the difference between those and the Utah mountains is they were actually created probably by earthquake faults. And so they're tectonic plates that are like rising up. And they actually matter. All right, so we're all in Los Angeles. Matt and Craig will be bringing you the game tomorrow on Root Sports, local broadcast throughout there. So Game 5 and Game 6.
Right, correct.
Are going to be local. Matt and Craig will be there. Ron and I are on radio each and every day for you along the way. All right, let's go big picture. It's a three-game series, two of them in L.A. Who's got the edge right now?
I'm going to go with the Jazz have the edge right now. I like the way they're playing. I think with Hayward coming back, I think they have a little bit too much power for what the Clippers have right now. Now, I know Austin Rivers is coming back, but with the loss of Blake Griffin, they just have to have another scorer. And I don't know if Austin Rivers can be that scorer after being out for as long as he's been out. This might take him a little while. It's going to help them defensively. I get that. But they have to come up with 20-some points, yeah. And I don't know if they can do that. Jamal Crawford had his Jamal Crawford night. You know, I don't know if he can replicate that again in Game 5, if he can. The Jazz have proven that Chris Paul and Crawford have big nights. They can still beat them.
Interesting point about Austin Rivers, I think Matt made. Has not played, I believe, since March 25th. So he's missed 10 games. That's a month of basketball. So to blend that back in, as Matt and Booner know, that's difficult to do, to be out that long and then try to be at the top of your game. I'm going to take another angle. I think that there's a lot of pressure on this franchise because of all the talk about Doc going to Orlando, the fact they're going to break this team up, Ballmer doesn't know if he can afford or wants to invest another $200+ million in this powerful threesome. And so with free agency looming, I think they're in kind of maybe a little, not panic mode, but backpedaling. Is this the end, especially with Blake Griffin out?
What about the fact they have 2-3 at home and the best player in the series?
I'm going to agree with Matt. I think that the Jazz definitely have an edge. Austin Rivers is not a concern to mine. My concern is J.J. Redick, especially the way the Jazz defended the Clippers the other night. One of the keys, one of the things they wanted to do, they was going to give up that weak side jumper, that weak side three. I expect Doc Rivers to make an adjustment there. These teams are too close, I think, to really say that there was a huge edge, but I'm going to give the Jazz the edge, that's for sure.
So Chris Paul's been the best player on the floor. I assume he'll continue to be the best player on the floor. Usually series are won by the best player most often. Did he get tired the other night? The one thing that jumps out to me when I looked at it is Blake Griffin, in the 3 games he played, or 2.5, he was 14 of 14 shooting in the first 9 seconds of the shot clock. So pre-15 on the shot clock, he was 14 of 14. He got the ball, rim ran, got down there, and they got on those possessions, Chris Paul didn't have to do anything. Last night, we watched the game on the plane together, Ron. He brought it up every time. I stopped 2 or 3 times and said, how tiring is this? Every possession, he's bringing it up and initiating the offense.
He doesn't have to work. He has to work now. If he played 38 minutes last night, he has to work 38 minutes because he's controlling the ball. I mean, even when he gave the ball up, he came right back to get it because he has the ball in his hands all the time. And then he's trying to defend George Hill or whatever other point guard is for. He's having to work, even though he only played, 38 minutes is a lot, but even though he played 38 minutes, that's still, you can almost double that because he's working both ends of the floor all the time. And I think that's hard.
My observation was that he was tired in the fourth quarter, and you guys are right about him initiating the offense and then also trying to play some D. How does Doc try to hide him, or does a team hide him once in a while on a play or two to give him some rest? But this guy is on that search dribble. He takes a lot of contact. He runs the floor, circles and circles around. Look, if you're even a five-year pro and 26 or 27, it still tires you out. Think about it with 12 years of basketball on those legs.
I'm not going to go to the tired route. I don't buy into that. I think with national TV games, you get those long timeouts. That's enough for a player to get their rest and they come back. I'm going to go with the Jazz change their defense more. I think Favors did such a better job in the fourth quarter than he did in game three. In game three, he was kind of in no man's land on those pick and rolls. He wasn't really going to DeAndre. He wasn't really stopping Chris Paul. I think the Jazz did a great job of at the point of screen. They showed bodies. They got out. They made him go east-west and not north-south, and they made him put more dribbles on the floor. And then they took him out of a rhythm. They made him give up the ball, and I think that was the key in the late stages of that game. And when he gave it up, you know, sometimes he got it back, but sometimes he didn't get it back.
What's the reaction to that?
Advantage Jazz.
The beauty of this conversation is the multiple topics that you can go through with this series, because I think every one of these conversations we're having plays a role in how the outcome will truly come, how it will play out. I mean, the extra 30 seconds in the timeouts. Matt and Boone are no better than you and I, Locke, about resting during timeouts, and I'm guessing that is a huge advantage just to catch your wind. All I can say is football, and you know what? That's a long time ago. But
plus, also, he also had in the a couple of his shots at the very end of the game were those throw-up shots that Hail Marys, right? I mean, it was late. Yeah. They had to have some points, and they weren't good looks. So I think he took 2 or 3 of those at the very end of the game where they weren't great looks, but they just needed a shot, an attempt at the end of the game for a three-point shot.
Or a free throw.
Let me add a couple of things here. One is, as Matt was talking about, Derek Favors being better in game four. That was because of the change of the defense. And with Derek out there on the floor, yes, they did trap, and they did keep the ball in Chris Paul's hands longer than with Rudy. If you notice, Rudy was back. I mean, he was, for the most part, wasn't involved that much in the scouting report in practice. Because
he didn't play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Down the stretch, it was all Favors.
Because of that.
My point would be Chris Paul's time is fourth quarter time, not the first quarter time, right? And so Rudy kind of got by with Chris Paul being a distributor, not being as aggressive as he usually is in the bottom half of the fourth quarters.
Totally agree.
All right, so we're looking at this all from the Jazz eyes. And there are some, I think, I mean, I'm trying to find matchups. Like, as I look at this. To me right now, the matchup edges are all questions that what the Clippers have to answer. They have to answer Joe Johnson in the paint. Joe Johnson's 22 of 28 shooting in the paint. Ron and I were watching the game on the film. We stopped every time Joe Johnson hit the paint, and I asked Ron, where's the help come? How do they do this? There's no way they're going to let him pound into the paint again. I don't think.
We said that after game one, and they let him do it again in game four. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Brandon Bass. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Anderson. I think Doc is going to have to give one of these two guys a shot to guard Joe, because Joe has proven now that it doesn't matter who's guarding him right now. They're, outside of Blake Griffin, he's got that advantage the entire night.
Let me drop a note on this one. So offensive rating, points per 100 possession. Ron's got his hands over his head. The league best was 112 this year by the Warriors. Without Blake Griffin on the floor, with Joe Johnson on the floor, the Jazz offensive rating in the series is 131. Absolutely, they have no answer, exactly as you said. Now, Brandon Bass and Allen Anderson blow up their whole spacing, and then they probably can't play Luke Mbamute with either of those two guys.
But how much offense is Mbamute giving you, too? I mean, he had 15 in game three, but he's really not a scorer. So then you say, I'm going to disagree with you there. If I'm the Jazz, I'm leaving him open in game five, game six, and game seven. I continue. Even if he has 15 points, I'm not going to let Chris Paul beat me.
I'm all for that, too. I'm all for making him someone else beat you other than him. But he can't score, believe me. Let me give one note here. And the reason I had my head over wasn't because you was giving some of those numbers that numbers that I call numbers. Useless numbers that I could care less about. But it was because I just read something about Felton and Crawford trying to defend the Jazz player, in particular Joe Johnson, is staggering. Meaning that what Matt was saying, they have to get someone else, they have to try someone else to defend him. Otherwise, Joe Johnson's going to have another big night.
I'm not sure they can because of Quinn's systems. So if they're switching one through four, that's kind of what everyone does. So unless they decide they're going to no longer switch, he can play Brandon Bass or Allen Anderson, but then we're running George Hill off Joe Johnson picks and Joe Ingles off Joe Johnson picks and getting whichever guy we want, and then Joe goes to ISO Joe, which during the regular season, everyone doesn't like ISO stuff. In the postseason, when you got your matchup, that's how you win games.
You know, Matt calls Joe the professional scorer, which truly is a great name for him, because I've been so impressed. And again, I've watched him throughout his career in the East, but never like this. And his strength is amazing to me. He will wear you down. He knows how to handle his body. And at 17 years into this league, or 16, he just has a knack. You saw it in the fourth quarter in game four, where he was able to back down guys. He was able to shade and actually draw his defender along with him into the paint and make his move, rise up in a crowd and still make incredible shots. It's a joy to watch a guy that has such great technique in this game and still knows how to play it at a level. When we're watching, you know, the three ball dominate, he can hit the three, yes, but he can also still have a great touch in the paint, and he takes everybody along for the ride.
Well, if you go 22 or 28 in the paint, we don't need a three.
True.
Like that, the analytics are telling you to shoot that shot, but nobody else can do that. Well, let me get your guys' perspective on Joe as two guys who played the game. What jumps out to you that's unique to him and what he's doing in these possessions, whether it's the one we watch where DeAndre Jordan actually comes over and doubles and he still scores it? Like, what is it that he's got going on there?
First of all, he's 6'7", weighs about 250 pounds, which means you don't move him around. He gets where he wants to go off the dribble. As long as he has space, he's going to get to his sweet spots, those 56% shooting spots out there on the floor. It doesn't matter who's on him. You put a body on a guy like that, you can shoot over the top of him. He's shooting 5- and 8-foot push shots. I mean, I'll take those shots any day. He can get there, that's for sure.
Can I interject and ask Matt a question? How much did you weigh at when you played?
230.
So Joe's at 250?
Close to 250.
But yet they switched him to the four, and he still is able to muscle the big guys down low, which is an amazing thing, that he goes from the three, and he's given up poundage to a lot of guys, but still he's able to use lower body strength. And Matt was a tough nut, right? We know that.
He played football?
Yeah, I think he did.
Well, that's the thing. The Clippers aren't really guarding him with a four.
Yeah.
You know, with Blake Griffin being out, they're guarding him with a three. And they're trying to guard him with smaller guys, and it's just not gonna work. Yeah. To me, Joe Johnson, he's one of the best that I've seen of taking his time to get to the spot that he wants to get to on the floor. And he does it so deliberately, and he's so smart at this stage of the game. It doesn't matter the magnitude of the game or the moment. He still is under control all the time. He still knows the shot clock's at 5 seconds. He'll take that thing down to 1 second to get to his spot, and then he'll decide what he wants to do from there. And I think that's patience. I don't know if you can teach that. I think that's just it's instinct with Joe. Yeah. He's had that, and he's got it, and it's hard to replicate that. But, you know, they say that, you know, he's a scorer, but, man, he passed the ball when he needed to last night, too.
They didn't double it all. They called timeout. The next three possessions they doubled. He hit three-point shooters. So I would assume, I mean, it's not a great answer. I'd assume they're going to try something creative in how they're going to double what they're going to do. What's maybe that we're seeing the strength of Jazz for the first time is no matter what combination of Hill, Hayward, Hood, and Ingles you have out there, you have guys that are shooting better than 38% from three. So it's not – there's not somebody to naturally leave. What do we expect the Clippers to do when the Joe Johnson, here he comes, working his way at the slow pace? What do we expect to see from the Clippers there?
Well, I think you're going to see, like I said, either Brandon Bass a little bit. They're going to experiment a little bit. You also could see a very small lineup and just full rotation. They're going to come down and double and everyone and pre-rotate and get to the shooters, but leave DeAndre Jordan inside. So you're going to almost leave one of their shooters. They're going to pick a Jazz shooter to say, okay, how are you going tonight? And then they're going to dare him to shoot. I think you're going to get a little of that. You might even get a late double with DeAndre Jordan. They're going to leave maybe Favors and come off the weak side and try to push Favors underneath or Rudy underneath to not give up the lob, but they're not going to let Joe Johnson get those two-foot shots anymore.
That last one's interesting. All right, we watched the film.
Yeah.
Let's dig into that last thing Matt just said, Ron.
I think they'll run someone at him, and I think they'll, especially late in the shot clock. I don't think they'll double with DeAndre Jordan. I think they're going to leave DeAndre Jordan close to the basket. If they double with DeAndre Jordan, Rudy's going to eat him up. But I think what they will do is protect the weak side of the floor some kind of way, keep him from making that skip pass there, and make Joe Johnson have to turn and throw back behind him somewhere. You know, the playoffs is really difficult, I think, for coaches, but because the adjustments you have to make from game to game. And then Quinn Snyder has to he has to anticipate what kind of adjustment that Doc Rivers is going to make and try to make his team ready for it going into the ballgame. So it's awfully tough to do. You know, I mean, we'd like to see a lot of things, but I don't know if we'll see it.
And that brings up a point. I'm not sure if the Jazz mind of a Brandon Bass comes off the bench who's not been engaged in this playoff series, but he's another body. I get what he's talking about. But with Joe, I don't know if you can really rattle him. This is really, I think, the biggest key is that, as both you guys said, the shot clock, most of the shots in game four were late releases. I mean, you know, in that five, under the 5 second category in the shot clock, and there was just no rattling of Joe Johnson. So if you double him, he seems to rise up in a crowd and still get the ball away. I'm impressed with what he's done.
You know, I agree with everything we're all saying here, but how many minutes are we talking about with Brandon Bass or Allen, as you just mentioned? How many minutes are we talking about with those guys on the floor? I mean, they're going to need those. They're going to need Paul. They're going to take a chance on Jordan being hot, trying to get J.J. Redick together. But those minutes that we're talking about, those aren't going to be very many minutes for those guys coming out.
I do think Austin Rivers – now, he hasn't played for a month, and so I totally agree with what Matt said earlier. But I do think, and I kind of agree also with Bowler on the point that if they're going Brandon Bass and Allen Anderson, it's a sign of desperation, right? It's a real sign that, like, hey, these guys haven't been doing anything, and we're going, all right, your turn. But I do think Austin Rivers changes things because he's a pretty good defensive player, and he's a dribble penetrator. The one thing they really don't have other than Raymond Felton is guys that go to the rim. Chris Paul takes 8% of his shots at the rim. Jamal Crawford takes 6% of his shots at the rim. J.J. Redick takes 7% of his shots at the rim. And Felton goes to the rim, and Austin Rivers goes to the rim. And Austin Rivers could start to penetrate and dribble penetrate offensively. And defensively, if he and Mbah Mute are on the floor together, that's two high-quality defenders. Chris Paul's pretty good. They could actually have three good defenders. Right now, they have to have Jamal Crawford and J.J. Redick on the floor together, and those are two bad defenders. I understand who Austin Rivers as a player is, but I think in this series, he really gives them a bounce if he comes back well.
I think the minutes that he's going to get, or they would put those two, would be Paul Pierce's minutes. I think you're done seeing Paul Pierce in this series. I just don't think he's in game three at 20 minutes and goose eggs across the board. Last night he was not a factor either in the 12 minutes. So I think those are the minutes that they would probably try something to see if it works.
Let me jump in here. Those minutes have been at the four, most right. So who's there? So I mean, you think
I was shocked that Doc started Spates last night. I thought they would bring him off the bench. I wouldn't be surprised.
Johnson, right?
I thought they might try Wesley Johnson. Yeah. So they would try something else that goes small right away. I think you're going to see a lot of adjustments. I don't think Doc's going to rest and play the same way he did in Game 4.
Do you think they can throw out an Austin Rivers, Jamal
yes.
Crawford, J.J.
yes,
Redick,
yes, I was just
Paul.
About to go there. I was there all four smalls and with DeAndre Jordan and go late on the commit. And when you go late with Joe Johnson, which causes you're not getting the roll from Gobert like you do on a pick and roll. On a pick and roll from the high screen, Gobert is rolling straight hard, right? When you get Joe Johnson in isolation, they can go late. Gobert is going to be usually outside the paint low. He's going to have to get himself back in the play if they do run that late pick, that late double on him. He's got to read the defense, and that's something that Rudy's done a good job this year, but he's got to be perfect if they're going to do that tomorrow.
From a non-player, can I ask a question to both these guys? So, with that said, Matt, that's intriguing with Jordan the big and the four guys out. How would Quinn Snyder then be forced to – because this is what they always talk about in postseason play. Are you going to force – does Doc think he can force Quinn to change, or would Quinn force Doc to change back if this would hold
Quinn
true?
I think Quinn has to change on that. I think Quinn stays with his Joe Johnson, Joe Ingles as the four – with Gordon Hayward, Rodney Hood, George Hill, and some combination of those guys stays on the floor. The question is just whether they can handle this. We can handle the speed defensively,
right,
and whether or not the defensive scheme gets. But to
so
some
does
extent,
Mac, does Mac Exum or Neto play a factor at all in minutes?
I think you would hope not. I mean, frankly, at this point of the series, you hope.
But
that Brandon Bass, Allen Anderson, Howell, Neto, Dante Exum don't make.
But,
right?
But your deep and guard play. My point was only that the fact is, can you the speed that you need to stay out on the floor with those guys? I'm just not, and again, with Gordon's health, I'm not sure how that's going to.
Dante Exum's 8 minutes the other night, or 7 minutes, yeah, that gave Joe Johnson a rest in the fourth quarter, were as big as any minutes there because Joe Ingles slid to the four and Joe Johnson got a rest, and that left him fresh for the final seven. Those minutes by Dante, or the use of Quinn,
yep,
figuring out how to get, were huge.
I think in game four, Doc Rivers went small. It gave him a chance to rest Chris Paul. Remember how long he was out of the ball game? Because we expect him to be out a couple of minutes and come back in. Ended up playing 38 minutes. But he was able to give Chris Paul a rest. And they hung in there. I mean, it was a close basketball game. My issue here, my problem here is wondering, you know, what the Jazz are going to do with that middle pick and roll with Chris Paul.
Well, all right, let's get to it. Because if they go to the lineup that Matt's talking about, how do you defend a high pick and roll with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, which we have not figured out yet, and with J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, and Austin Rivers on the floor, there's no Bamute to come off of or guys to release off of. That becomes incredibly difficult to defend.
I think it becomes incredibly difficult. And hell, excuse me. But it's been it's been that way
sorry,
for four
podcast.
Games. It's been that way for four,
it now.
For four games already. That, you cannot. You just can't solve it right now. But I don't know what the Jazz are going to have to do to slow it down. Chris Paul is so good, so smart. He does a lot of things well, shoots the basketball well. I just wonder what the Jazz, how they're going to counter that. Because that's been, I mean, they ran that play every time down the floor, it seemed like, there in the second half. And just that middle pick, he decides on what. There's two guys there.
The V, the squeeze. Right. What do you got? What do you call it?
The high pick and roll.
No, when you got the two guys.
You got two guys.
Oh, double high pick.
Yeah. Double high pick. So they've got the one guy. He's got the four on one side, the five
on
the other.
You want to go out, you just go out, and he decides on what side he wants to go, and it works from there.
You know, they might just flip the script a little bit and say, you know what, we're not going to stop Joe, but he's got to stop us. So they might go to that very small lineup, which is going to cause Joe to have to guard an Austin Rivers or someone like that, and say, we're going to ISO you now. And see what happens, and they try to just outscore the Jazz. You know, I mean, that's a strategy that Doc Rivers might come out as well. I mean, it all depends on how healthy Austin Rivers is. We don't know.
Yeah, I love this conversation, man. Two former players, one from one generation, one from another, and just you know, the game has changed, and you know, Matt's looking at it one way, and Booner's got, you know, his theories as well. But you know what? I love two coaches that are I think very capable of making some adjustments when necessary. Quinn has proven that he can do that. Plus, I think the Jazz, we all know, is a deeper team. And so I think he's got more tools and more players to throw at Doc in case they do throw this type of smaller lineup at us.
The Clippers don't have 48 minutes of lineups anymore. The big change. We didn't have 48 minutes of lineups without Gobert.
Right.
They don't have 48 minutes of lineups anymore. They're trying to gap portions of the game right now to survive. The Jazz can throw out 48 minutes of lineups. That's the, back to the first question, to me, that's the huge edge. The Jazz are the better team than the Clippers.
Right, without Blake Griffin, absolutely.
Right now. The question is Chris Paul, the singular plays, and we get into these singular matchups. Mm-hmm. And what I think is fascinating about this conversation is nobody can stop anyone.
Right.
When this series started, the question was, could the Jazz score? Jazz offensive rating's been over 120 in both of the last two nights. Like, 40, now nobody can stop it.
42% three-point shooting?
Yeah.
They put up 100. We talked about this on the plane. 100 shots, they've made 42. Will that trend continue? Quinn Snyder was here. He said absolutely it will.
Let me be the geek here for a second. The number one stat conversation in the league this year is the variance of three-pointers. That is the number that has the highest variance and just skews things. And they're shooting about 32% from three, and we're shooting about 42%. And we just better hope that we can sneak out of this series before the numbers come back to the mean, because that's an unnatural skew on our end and an unnatural skew on theirs.
I would agree.
And if we play 10 times or 15 times, that number will get back to the middle, and we just better hope it doesn't happen in the next two games.
Redick and Crawford have both struggled from the three-point line. And finally, Crawford finally broke out of an 0-for-11 slump in Game 4.
0-for-16 in playoffs.
Yeah, playoffs, yeah.
Let me throw something else out at these guys here as well, because we've been having our statistician track points, well, last 10 seconds.
Field goal percentage
is the last 10 seconds. And I, for one, thought the Jazz were better in the last 10 seconds of a shot clock, and that's where they were going to hold a huge advantage. That has not been the case, especially with Chris Paul with the ball in his hands. They have outplayed us in game 2 and 3 in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock.
Yeah.
So that theory that I had that we're going to have a huge advantage of, because we move the basketball, we have, you know, a few variations of how we can score, I thought that was a huge advantage. But Chris Paul's, he's changed those things. Last 10 seconds have gone, I think, to the Clippers.
Well, to me, in game 4, they slowed their pace down. I think that's Jazz basketball. You're not going to beat the Jazz playing against their half court set defense. And the Clippers, they tried to do that too much. I thought they're better this year when they're up and down. And I think in Game 5, you're going to try to see. And I promise Doc Rivers is probably going to talk about pace when he goes in his press conference. Hey, we got to get up and down the court, because that's when they were good this year, when they have fast break points.
But
let me jump in.
We've heard him say that.
Yeah, but let me jump
but
in.
They haven't ran.
On national television, on one of the interviews, he said, we can't play with tempo without Blake Griffin. Without Blake Griffin, we don't play with tempo.
If they go small, they can. Right?
That's a great point.
So if they go small, they can. And so let's see if this lineup that we were talking about, if they just try, you know, we're going to get out, we're going to run.
I still think the key, I like Matt's game plan for Doc. I think the big key, though, is minutes played, age with Crawford, age with Paul, and also the health of Austin Rivers, and is he really back? I just don't know if a guy can go that many minutes and play that hard and make the cuts and the rotations that you have to do on a hamstring that still has to be tender after missing 10 games. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll find out.
All right, so here's the final thing, and there's no numbers to this, so it makes me very uncomfortable.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Knock the Jazz team trying to knock, if they have to try to win this series, they got to knock the Clipper. That, they all talk about that closeout win. So there's two things that I think are going to play here that are non-numbers. One is there's got to be a tremendous mental fatigue. I'm exhausted today from just calling the games. I can't imagine what it's like to have been playing in these possession-by-possession games. There has to be just a real exhaustion of players. So when does someone's tank hit empty in this series? And two, when the Clippers are about to be knocked out, and they've got, you know, we can criticize them for all their playoff experience, but they've got 7 playoff series of experience. Note, by the way, under Doc Rivers in this group is 2-4 in game 5s and 2-4 in game 6s. Just a little note there. I had to get a number. It made me feel comfortable.
I think Steve Ballmer knows that number, okay, too.
How does the knockout factor and the just mental fatigue factor play here for the rest of this week?
I disagree. I think as you go along in the series, you get more invigorated. You get more energy. You start figuring out. It's like learning something new every day. You like doing that, right? You like, oh, man, that was kind of cool. It's the same thing. You're playing against the same team, and now you're learning, like, okay, in game 5, we're going to do this now because we found out that this worked, this didn't work. And so you know each other so well, but yet you're ready for the next game, and the games get more exciting, not less exciting. What was your second question?
Like
the knockout factor. You know, I think in a seven-game series, I don't think that's as big of a deal. I think the best team ends up winning. I truly believe that. I think right now the Jazz have the best team. And I just think top to bottom, and if Blake Griffin was playing, I probably wouldn't say that. But when I look at the game last night and I look at the two rosters, the Jazz are just deeper. And in the end, I don't care if it's home court. I think they got guys like Joe Johnson, George Hill, you know, even Hayward, Favors, Gobert. They've been there a little bit. Even Gobert's been an international play. He's had some big games overseas. You know, he's not really a rookie when it comes to that stuff. So everyone's been in big games at this point, both teams. And I think, you know, I see the Clippers struggling a little bit more than the Jazz right now.
You know, David, I love having these two guys broadcast radio, television, radio, whatever day it may be, right? You and I have to make those adjustments ourselves. But that's,
I made you make one extra.
Yeah, I did. Hey, we had a good time in San Antonio. But, what's amazing is the fact that Matty just said, because that's the way he played, and I think Boone probably agrees as well. I won't put words in your mouth, Ron. But he got more invigorated because of as the series goes on. As we talk as broadcasters, man, I'm fatigued. These guys have got to be worn out. He just brought up a really interesting point, and I think it goes back to one thing for the Jazz. It's 1 through 12. It's the depth, and that I agree with Matt that we are the better team, 1 through 12. They've got basically 8 guys that are healthy and able to play, and I think that will ultimately be the deciding factor, that the Jazz just have more bodies, if healthy, depending on what Hayward's status is from his food poisoning. But I got to, you know, he's got 48 hours. He's got 24 more to go as we talk right now to get back from that. But I just think the depth of the Jazz will finally pay its dividend, as we talked about it nearly a year ago.
And I totally agree with Matt, because I know for a fact that you work your butt off all year long to get into the playoffs. I don't want to hear that tired stuff. You know, you play, you practice it. February, you should be in the best condition of your life right there as a basketball player. And some guys are resting as the season goes on. So I don't buy into that tired factor. I think as the season goes on, you get into the playoffs, I mean, you're excited about being there. Listen to those fans there. I mean, you can't tell me that they don't give you a little more shot in the arm there and wanting to play harder. And if you don't play hard and after the ball game you don't feel a little tired, you better go out there and play another quarter or something, because you should be a little bit tired and ready to go the next night.
And the side note on this is there's probably no less good home court advantage than the Staples Center for the Clippers in the NBA. No offense to the Clipper fans, but just it's not their building. Like I'm not criticizing the diehard Clipper fans. It's not their building. It's somebody
Chris
else's
Paul.
Building. Right. No, that's what I think Chris Hall's – I think his comment was a huge
compliment,
and I think the biggest thing that drove him most crazy when he came to L.A. from New Orleans was that the way that people saw the stars of the NBA, you couldn't afford Laker tickets at the time, so you bought Clipper tickets so you could see everybody else in the league.
Yeah.
And I have a ton of friends here who live in L.A., I went to college here, who are NBA fans, and they buy Clipper season tickets with no intention of ever rooting for the Clippers because it lets them see LeBron and Durant and Curry and everybody else and Russ and James. And they have something to do, but it's because the Laker tickets were too expensive. So I think Chris Paul's comment was very deep in his heart of that I wish I was playing for a team that had that type of atmosphere, and
we
I
all
don't
wear the same jersey.
Yeah,
that's really what he was trying.
And
to
we
say.
All wore the same shirt for, it was clad in white this week. All right, Matt Harper and Craig Bolajack on Root Sports. The games are locally televised. Make sure you grab them. Ron and I will be there for radio. We'll do pregame Periscope an hour before the game. Radio coverage will be extended for. Tip of the hat to Adrian Leiser and Austin Horton. I don't know if you guys have listened on the drive home, but they're going beyond the regular postgame show to like 1 o'clock in the morning every night. Just love all the Jazz Nation stuff. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. Make sure you tune in to local broadcasts and get the feel from the guys you know. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.